Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, the Supreme Court passes an interim order in the Gyanwapi Masjid dispute. Secure the Shivling area inside the mosque, but don't stop Muslims from praying. But that's just for now. It's an interim order. It comes up in court in a couple of days. All of that on a day when a court in Varanasi removed the official who was leading the videography survey. Now, this official was in charge when lawyers revealed that the contents of his survey were out even before it had been presented in court. But the larger issue is this. Does the Hindu faith get stronger by imposing its might on minorities? When exactly do we stop digging for old temples? Is the Gyanwapi Masjid controversy an assertion of majoritarian power? That's our big debate. Later on the show, a very special guest, the new Confederation of Indian Industry Chief, Sanjeev Bajaj. At a time when the economy continues to face considerable headwinds, we ask, soaring inflation, lowering growth forecasts, is India staring now at stagflation, or is the India story still positive overall? So the big debate tonight, the Gyanwapi Masjid controversy, is this an assertion of majoritarian power? Joining us, Pawan Khera. We're also joined by Professor Gobardhan Das, the BJP leader and professor of the JNU, and we'll be joined by our other panelists in a little while from now. Professor Das, you know, just reading the Ayodhya judgment itself, in addition to the 1991 Act, where is the legal basis for changing the fundamental character of the Gyanwapi Masjid?
So, good evening, Vishnu, and good evening, my fellow panelists. See, this is the legal battle of 352 years. So, I would like to make there are two points. Number one, in my opinion, all the we live in the sovereign country. All the citizens have the right to know our history, and in fact, the Varanasi court rightfully, give an order to investigate by the ASI, Archaeological Survey of India, with 5 points. And I am not going in the deep in the 5 points, but I think this is correct to find it out what is the fact. Then now, if after digging out the fact, then what is going to happen, that will be decided by the court, decided by the Supreme Court. So that we have to live with it. Number two.
No, so sir, if, what the court has point, to go by no, no, the no. law.
Yes, okay.
What I'm trying to say is,
I'm coming back to your point.
Yes. So
allow me 30 seconds.
Yes.
In 1991, the places of worship, the act, it says, I really don't want to read the full, but it said the religious character of any place of worship as it existed on 15th August 1947.
Yes.
Very correct.
Yes.
In 1947, on 15th of August, what was the character of this place in this, right now, what we call Gyanwapi Masjid? One has to determine in two ways.
No, are you suggesting that the character of this historic dispute changed after independence?
No. Yeah, absolutely not. Just if you can go back to the story, if you dig out, if they find it out, there is existence of temple.
No, absolutely, below. Sir. There may well be an existence of a temple. There may be a Shivling over there.
So,
there may be other Hindu archaeological features. But, sir, Gobardhanji, that is something which existed prior to 1947.
That's correct.
1947 is the cutoff. After that, you cannot change. It is no longer in dispute.
Allow me to speak.
You cannot change the structure.
Nay, I'm not disputing that. Allow me to speak. Unless you allow me to speak,
I disagree with that.
In that 1947, 15th of August, one has to find it out whether what was the character of this place, whether it is a mosque or is it a temple. If it is a temple, historically the mosque existed well before independence. Even well before independence. If you look at the 1936, court order, it says this is not. I mean, somebody called Deen Muhammad appeal to the court and says this is the, you declare this is the place right, for the okay. mosque. And it says, is that
and yet at the overall structure. All right, let me bring Pawan Khera in. Sir,
Let me finish. If you see this, somebody is the, you know, किसी के घर पे जाके पोस्टर लगाने से तो क्या कहता है, किसी का मालिक नहीं बन जाता है ना. फर्स्ट यू फाइंड इट आउट
the entire आर्किटेक्चर ऑफ दिस इज नॉट प्रेजेंटली of a temple, it is of a masjid. There are domes over there, they are defining features. Yes, there may well be archaeological treasures over there which indicate a Hindu past. We are talking about changing its character. Pawan Khera, do you accept the fact that the fundamental character, whether this is a mandir or a masjid, needs now to be investigated? That apparently that has not been established.
No, we need to first debate on where do we start history from. You want the Nagpur school of thought, a Nagpur nursery of thought, and start history from the 12th century or the Mamluk dynasty? Up to you. What if the Adivasis or the ancient ancestral South Indians, what if the Adivasis were to say, ki bhaiya, Aryans ne jo kiya, we have to undo. Tell me what will happen. What is this? Hum bewakoof hain kya? Ki is tarah ki baatein kar rahe hain yahan baithkar. Now tell me, Vishnu, 1947, when partition happened, a lot of mosques in the Punjab region, Pepsu area, were converted into places of worship of other religions. Will you give it back to the Muslims if they were to seek? Bhaiya, masjid thi, de dijiye, hame wapas denge kya aap log? Na to aap adivasiyon ko unki zameen wapas denge. Aap bhi Aryan hai, hum bhi Aryan hai, bahar se aaye ya maniye ya mat maniye. Kahan se itihas shuru karenge, Mr. Govardhan Das? Hum bhi itihas padhe hain. JNU से नहीं पढ़े, कहीं और से पढ़े, पढ़े तो हैं. So you please decide. Wait, don't. I'm not sorry. You don't. Can't interrupt me. You please decide, Vishnu. इतिहास शुरू कहां से होगा? Original inhabitant कौन है? Invader कौन है? और invader कौन कब आया? आपको शुरू करना है 12वीं शताब्दी से, तो 12वीं शताब्दी से शुरू करिए.
अतुल जी joins us. Atul Garg, the senior BJP leader. Atul जी, we are a confident nation with a confident religion, Hinduism. We are proud of Hinduism as we are of every religion. Do we need to enforce that? Do we need to push that or thrust that, you know, on top of a minority? Does one become a weaker Hindu that one has to thrust this opinion on a minority? Why can't we just live in peace?
Main Hindi mein bolna chahunga.
Nahi, zarur bataiye.
Sabse pehle to aap minority keh kise rahe hain?
मुस्लिम कम्युनिटी को कह रहा हूं, इस विषय में मुस्लिम कम्युनिटी को कह रहा हूं.
मेरे पास पहली बात तो ये जो माइनॉरिटी हो रहा है, क्या जिस देश के अंदर सबसे ज्यादा मुसलमान रहते हो पूरी दुनिया के, क्या उसे माइनॉरिटी कहना चाहिए? अगर ये किसी ने कहा है माइनॉरिटी, तो क्या ये सबसे बड़ी
नहीं जी? ये माइनॉरिटी का डेफिनेशन हम तो बदल नहीं सकते.
अब आपके विषय पे आता,
अब माइनॉरिटी शब्द का डेफिनेशन तो हम बदल नहीं सकते अतुल जी. हिंदूज आर माइनॉरिटीज, मुस्लिम्स आर माइनॉरिटीज, मेजॉरिटी मुस्लिम्स आर माइनॉरिटी, दैट इज अ फैक्ट सर.
नहीं, इट इज नॉट अ फैक्ट, पर इट इज समथिंग यूजुअली टू से, ठीक है, ऐसा ही.
बट एनीवे, कैरी ऑन विद द रेस्ट ऑफ योर आंसर. या
परिसर कभी विषय पर रख लीजिएगा. दूसरी बात मैं ये कहना चाहता हूँ,
जी जी जी,
पहले मेरे को मुस्लिम लीडर से पूछवाइए जो ये कह रहा हो कि यहाँ पर साहब मंदिर तो था, जो ये कह रहा हो कि यहाँ पर शिवलिंग तो निकला है, जो ये कह रहा हो कि ये हिंदुओं की आस्था का बहुत बड़ा केंद्र तो
था. ओके, सॉरी अतुल जी, आपका लाइन थोड़ा खराब है. आई कम बैक टू इन अ सेकेंड. बट प्रोफेसर दास, वन मिनट सर.
यस.
अयोध्या वर्डिक्ट Paragraph 652, for any person who seeks solace or recourse against the actions of any number of ancient rulers, the law is not the answer. Our history is replete with actions that have been judged to be morally incorrect, even today are liable to trigger ideological debate. Let's have an ideological debate. But this is what the rules say, sir. We follow rules. You have to follow the rules. I have to follow the rules. We can debate it.
Yes. Yes. Very. You are very correct. Let me first answer honorable, the fellow panelist, Pavanji. All I wanted to say it is our right to know the history, the what is going to happen, whether there's a later course of action. That is.
So is that where it ends, sir? The right to know one's history? So, because I don't think anybody would dispute that. I think it is changing the character of this place of worship which people dispute.
So
learning about one's history is an intellectual exercise. That's fine.
Now, there are two points. You allowed to speak. Otherwise, this is the one-way talk, isn't it?
No. Go ahead.
If the first thing is, it is our right to know the history, number one. And the number two, on 1947, 15th of August, whatever, that was a temple or a mosque. So that another thing
domes of the structure, the people who used to pray there, how can you say that it wasn't a masjid?
Come on.
It's a masjid which may have been created on top of a temple. That is the debate which historians have to find out. But you cannot change the definition, sir.
So it's a definition. So if a place, if there is a the thousands year, this is a 2000 year, the sibling is there.
Yes.
If you agree. But if there is a tomb made on top of it, it becomes a mosque.
Right. So that is where you're wrong, sir. And I'll tell you why you're wrong, sir.
Yeah.
Again, let's refer to the landmark Ayodhya judgment, which in your book is landmark, sir. Let us look at Human history is testament to the rise.
No, sir.
This is very important, this line. It answers the point you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Human history is testament to the rise and fall of rulers and regimes. The law cannot be used as a device to reach back in time and provide a legal remedy to every person who disagrees with the course which history has taken. It's in black and white, sir. Not just this paragraph, any number of paragraphs. And yes, there are parts of Ayodhya which you can also use to support your argument. But, you know, Tanveer Ahmed Mir, let me come to you, sir. The other part of this is the 1991 Act. How does Ayodhya, the landmarked Ayodhya verdict, actually endorse 1991? Because people are also saying that 1991 needs to be re-looked at. In fact, it's up in the Supreme Court as well. But how does Ayodhya, the verdict, actually back up 1991, which says places of which are disputed, religious places, do not change their fundamental identity?
The Ayodhya verdict wholeheartedly and authoritatively endorses the 1991 Act. And therefore, once a constitutional bench of the Honorable Supreme Court authoritatively endorses a particular piece of legislation, if that legislation is changed, you doing something which the late Prime Minister Shri Rajiv Gandhi did in Shabano's case. At the end of the day, all these actions which have started, you know, we cannot deny that in a society, there will always be claims and counterclaims, whether they are based on deity, whether they are based on faith, or whether they are based on certain claims that certain people would have.
Yep.
So those claims are there. They will be there for eternity. They are to be contested, accepted, acknowledged, compromised, or otherwise. But what we cannot lose sight of is that prior to gaining of independence, we were under the British rule. Before that, we were split kingdoms, each kingdom having its own sovereignty, having its own history. History is replete. That's what their lordships have said in the Ayodhya verdict. Remember, it's after gaining independence that we are one nation, one constitution, one people with sovereign integrity and diversity, and we swear to the written constitution of India. As per the constitution, the people are supreme. The government is to serve the people of this country. I understand as a common Indian citizen that in India, to refer anybody as majority and minority
is nothing but nothing less than an insult to Indians. Nevertheless, once you have a written constitution, you have an enacted law. If the government of the day, the dispensation of the day, and my fellow panelists are there, who are legislators, they're politicians, right, or not, if they have the wherewithal and the will to change the law,
yeah,
the Supreme Court then is not going to say that, all right, you have no power in changing the law. But if you enact a new law, it is definitely amenable to a due process or a legislative, sure, challenge. Therefore, now, once the law is there, it is to be respected till it's not changed.
Right.
Therefore, exactly, any political narratives.
And I think, and I'm just interrupting because, you know, I've run short of time over here. If there is a judgment in the Supreme Court which puts aside 1991 and says that interpretation can take place of disputed religious structures, then that opens up a Pandora's box. Heaven help us if that were to happen in a country like ours. That's the big worry. We want peace most of all, and perhaps that would be problematic if that were to happen. I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us. Some comments. Pavanji, I'm sorry I couldn't come back to you. I apologize for that. A couple of comments on coup which have come in. Mohit says, in the past, the destruction of religious shrines may have been the function of state power, but modern India cannot repeat the same logic. Shiv says, secularism will be deepened if it lets history be history, not make history the foundations of a secular ethic. Ramdhari Singh says, the matter is sub judice. We should wait for a decision by the judiciary. I think it's Jeet. Yeah. Jeet says, in the case of Kashi or Mathura, will it also be known as an example of assertion of majoritarian power? In fact, that's what we were asking on this program tonight. The new Confederation of Indian Industry, President Sanjeev Bajaj, takes over at a time when there are considerable issues afflicting our economy and a billion plus nationals, even as India tries to get back on the fast growth track trajectory. While the growth numbers in the post-COVID context are encouraging, we find ourselves affected by record inflation rates, food insecurity, foreign investors selling Indian stocks, among other challenges. That's a lot of work to be dealing with, a lot of issues. Joining us now, Mr. Sanjeev Bajaj, the Chairman and Managing Director of Bajaj FinServe, a company which serves millions of customers in India through a host of financial services. Congratulations, Mr. Bajaj, on this very important post as one of our foremost industry leaders. My first question, should the government cut taxes on petrol and fuel?
As CII, we believe that that would be a timely thing to do right now. As we know that to the common man, the two major burdens from inflation are high fuel prices and high food prices. We are hoping for a normal monsoon. That's what the early forecasts say. And that should help reduce the impact of food prices. In the last few years, as oil prices fell, taxes were taken up. And I hope that in a collaborative manner between the central and the state governments, they can cut taxes on fuel so that they reduce the burden on the common man. It's also important because in the last few quarters, we are seeing the restart of domestic consumption. We are seeing new private investment coming up in multiple sectors, not just in commodities that we were seeing, but we've seen it in chemicals. We're seeing it in real estate and housing. We are seeing it in construction. And we need these tailwinds to continue. So if inflation is controlled partly by government action, partly by RBI's action, hopefully then that provides us with a continued runway for reasonably good growth.
So, Mr. Bajaj, another key issue that's come up of late, the entire issue of wheat exports. Does the government's flip-flop on wheat exports send out a poor international signal because there were so many international expectations?
I believe that we live in a very uncertain world. We know that this is driven mainly by this heat wave, which has affected us. Nobody could anticipate it. And that's why the government is playing both a role internationally. It also has to secure the internal requirements of its citizens, and that's what it's trying to do.
Right. But in this present scenario, there was no option. Was there no option but to ban the wheat export, other than, of course, to those who we'd already cleared for wheat exports? No other option, sir?
Yes, I believe that they will continue orders prior to a particular period of time. Plus, I believe that the government has said that on a government-to-government basis, wherever there is clear requirement, the government will support those countries. And beyond that, you know, these are volatile times. I don't think we can blame the government for that. The government could have chosen not to allow exports at all and would not have this discussion. So we need to give them some space as well for these kind of sudden changes that we are seeing driven by externalities.
So, you know, when we're talking about inflation, the RBI, of course, moved in proactively. They increased interest rates. But I think a lot of people would want to know that since inflation was progressively rising, do you share the opinion that perhaps the RBI could have been involved earlier on in righting the inflation situation?
That's a difficult question. You know, it's a no-win kind of question. RBI, if it wasn't for war, would have started, I believe, the interest rate reversal cycle a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Given the uncertainties of war, I believe that they continued with their accommodative stance that they referred to even in the last meeting. The suddenness of this increase has caught, I must say, all of us by surprise. And I would hope that one swallow doesn't a summer make, but rather RBI gets back in its next review in June to presenting a more stable picture and a calibrated picture of how we would see future rate hikes.
Mr. Bajaj, we are very famous in our country for setting disinvestment targets and even more famously failing to achieve them. It's not just this government, many other governments in the past. But let's talk about now disinvestment of LIC. You know, did the government sell what many see as a really precious asset, you know, in a market which was at its worst?
I believe the larger intent of the government is what must be recognized. Not only with LIC, but with Air India prior to that, I believe Pawan Hans will go on sale right now. I'm very much hoping, and the government has stayed committed, in at least in our discussions with them, that the privatization of the two public sector banks and one general insurance company will happen as well. It is the larger action from the government that we have to take note of.
Right.
In the short term, there could be naturally ups and downs because of such a volatile external scenario.
Mr. Bajaj, foreign investors selling Indian stocks, does this reflect a worry on the overall India growth expectations?
So, Vishnu, this is to me very clearly a reversal of the period of high liquidity.
Right.
Period of high liquidity, excess money ends up going into safe havens, goes into safe stocks. That readjustment is what has already started happening. I continue to believe that capital will chase good opportunities. And as long as we are building good, solid businesses for the future, whether we are a startup or an incumbent, we will get access to capital.
Yeah.
But it is also very clear in these times, we can't rely only on foreign capital to fund our growth. If we have to become a large, strong economy, we have to build a strong domestic financial services industry too.
Mr. Bajaj, let's talk a little bit about the middle class who are really suffering in the present scenario with inflation and even those who are from economically less privileged backgrounds. You know, banks have a 5% deposit rate or thereabouts. We have 8% inflation, and money seems to therefore be losing value even in banks. You know, isn't this the worry? The power of savings is diminished very, very fast.
So this present small window that we have seen, effective negative interest rates, is what will get adjusted with RBI taking rates up and hopefully as a result of that, inflation coming down.
Right.
Eventually, as our economy expands, there will be additional savings in the pockets of the middle class, and we have to see how to channelize these savings into more productive assets rather than just keeping them in bank deposits, more productive financial assets, because typically, by the time you're $2,000 per capita GDP, you've taken care of your large physical needs, home, house, children's education. So that is what we have to incentivize the common man for. And then to see that from those financial assets, how can we deploy them for long-term benefits for the country?
One final question. You know, we were talking about wheat exports, you know, obviously food security. you know, there's also the entire issue of power supply, and both of these are affected by extreme climate, you know, situations. The intense heat has affected wheat growth in India. Power supply has gone up sharply, again, because of the intense heat. Coal in short supply in some places. So the question is this. Is climate change now a serious economic threat to India that we really must start recognizing?
It absolutely is. And we can see this current heat wave. None of us have experienced anything like this in our lives. It is driving change faster than we know. And as Indian industry and as a country, we have to take cognizance of it, step up to ensure that we green ourselves faster. You will see, even internationally, you will see funds flowing only or more and more into those companies that build sustainable businesses. I also believe that we create a whole new set of sunrise industries that will move us towards net zero. So it is both a threat, a responsibility, but also very much an opportunity.
Well, Mr. Bajaj, let's hope that, you know, that optimism that you have in the Indian economy bears fruit in the long run. Certainly, there are green shoots over there, and India is spoken about very highly by many who believe that the pace of coming out of COVID is quite positive. But as we've discussed, there are several factors, many of them within the Indian economy itself, which really need to be looked at very closely. Out of time on Left, Right and Center from all of us over here. Goodbye.